Before you arrive, you remember your Lola smoking. You remember the smell of her dried tobacco, like hay after a storm. The soft crinkle of the rolling paper. The zip of the matchstick, which she'd sometimes strike against the lizard rough skin of her leg to impress you. You remember the ritual of it. Her mouth was too dry to lick the paper shut, so she had you do it. The twiggy pieces of tobacco sticking to your tongue like bugs' legs as you wetted the edges. She told you it was an exchange. Your spit for her stories. Tales of the old country, of ruined kingdoms and tragic betrayals, and old trees that drank the blood of foxes foolish enough to sleep amongst their sharp roots. Any tale that could be told in the span of one quickly burning cigarette.
"It was all so very different back then," she'd begin, and you'd watch the paper curl and burn between her fingers as she described the 100 wolves who hunted the runaway son, and the mighty sword, Jadero, so thin it could cut open the space between seconds. Her words forever married to the musk of her cigarette and her bone-rattling laughter, so much so that whenever you think of that place, long ago and far away, you cannot help but think of smoke and death. When did she first tell you of the inverted theater? You were 13, you think. It was around that age that she often seemed startled by you, offended even, her lip curling whenever you came into the room as if an untoward stranger had just tripped into her on the street. You thought her distaste was because of your body odor, your oily skin, your shy hunch, but the truth was she was just surprised by how quickly time had passed. Your youth wounded her. It made her want to protect you and to kick you out the door.
"Sit," she said when she saw you passing the kitchen.
"Listen, I have a tale to tell."
The warm breeze-blown night came in through the propped-open window, playing at the sheer curtains and the smoke from your Lola's fingers as she told you of the theater that stood between worlds.
"Once, the moon and the water were in love."
She lingered on that word, love, just as the smoke lingered in the air.
"You can imagine it was not the most convenient affair. One was trapped in the heavens, the other, the earth. One was stillness itself, the other made only of waves and tempests. But they were happy for a time. The moon would bathe the water in its radiance, and the water would dance with its ebb and flow to the moon's suggestion. And though they occupied different spheres, they were able to visit one another through less direct means, for there is no barrier in this life that love cannot overcome. The water would send up to the skies plump storm clouds, swollen with its essence, its cool mist and salty breath kissing the moon's dry and cracked surface. And the moon, when it wished to visit the water, would cast its reflection into the water's surface, and in the inverted world that lies suspended below our own in glass and still water, they would meet and dance and make love."
Your Lola paused and stared at you from between curls of smoke in study of your expression. There was a time when you would be squeamish at the mere hint of intimacy in her tales, but not this time. This time you simply sat in rapt attention, a sign of maturity that both heartened and depressed her.
"Anyway," she said after a rasped inhalation, "it was in that world of reflection where they built the theater that is the locus of our tale. Being the patron gods of artists and dancers, the moon and the water both loved the stage, which is why they created their own. A pagoda so tall, its height cuts through the heavenly bands within which the performances of the ages would be hosted. The telling of tales beyond even my knowing," she coughed. "Even after the moon and the water parted ways, the theater remained, run by their love child, a being of immense beauty who took to inviting even mortals such as us to come visit their arena.